Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 1148 of the Juice Box Podcast. Jenny's back for another Grand Rounds episode, and today she and I are going to talk about how doctors should be thinking about diabetes management, how to talk to you about using insulin, and so much more. While you're listening, please remember that nothing you hear on the Juice Box Podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your healthcare plan or becoming bold with insulin. If you'd like to help with type 1 diabetes research right from the comfort of your home, it's easy to do. Go to t1dexchange.org/juicebox and complete the survey. That's it. It takes like 10 minutes. We're looking for U.S. residents who have type 1 diabetes or are the caregivers of someone with type 1. Of specific and special note, men and men of color or boys of color. Difficult to get that data. The T1D Exchange thinks they could really help people if they had it. If you fit any of these categories I'm talking about, men, boys, girls, ladies, have type 1, you're the parent of somebody, filling out that survey is a great way to help. And it's a great way to help the podcast. It also might end up helping you. T1DExchange.org/juicebox. Today's episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by the Contour Next Gen Blood Glucose Meter. This is the meter that my daughter has on her person right now. It is incredibly accurate and waiting for you at contournext.com/juicebox. This show is sponsored today by the glucagon that my daughter carries, Gvoke HypoPen. Find out more at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. So today, for the Grand Round series, we're going to talk about management.
Ooh.
That's our header.
It's and, a broad topic.
Well, and there's a lot here, so indeed it is.
A lot of feedback from people.
A lot of notes that you and I made on this document back when we were talking about doing this, a couple of things. Why don't we just start with a little bit of feedback and we'll work our way into it.
Cool.
I wish my doctor would have told me that staying high for long periods is just as dangerous as a low.
Yeah.
So that's education, right? Like that's understanding big picture. And whether doctors know it or not, this don't have a seizure idea, which is something I really don't want anybody to do.
Right.
Say, I didn't want to sound like I was minimizing it. But no. this better high than low idea, I understand why they might say it initially, but you have to tell people the rest of that story and why high and low is bad, why stability is what they're looking for, how to get to stability, because just telling them better high than low, I think leads them down the wrong path that's difficult to get back from.
Mainly because there's not follow-up to it is what that really leads to. Mm-hmm. They're given a directive of better high than low initially. And you know what? Maybe okay right now, but define that. Give them a week from now, once we're seeing how your insulin is working, once we see where numbers really are, once we see how you're reacting to the current doses and we make some other adjustments, we will talk further about this, right? Because initially you may actually, there's a math equation to figuring out initial starting doses for any age and person, but it's still just a starting place.
Yeah.
And it's still not as precise as it eventually will get. So sure, a little higher right now. Let's see how things go. We're going to touch base in a week or in a couple of days. We're going to look at this and we're going to say, okay, now we can nudge that high. We don't want to stay high long term down the road.
Yeah.
Right now, we're just going to keep things from here to here. Maybe the target range is wide right now. Narrow it when you have follow-up. And also put that into, you know, your notes about what was discussed. We defined blood sugar target range here to here so that whoever is the follow-up physician or clinician knows what you've talked about. They can easily see it in the medical record. And then that doctor or caregiver can clean that up,
yeah,
can help to define that further for you. But when you give a blanket statement, that sticks.
Yeah. It also makes the next physician, not just the patient, but the next physician, leery about changing what's happening right now.
Right.
Right. Right. They think this was for a reason. Somebody told you to keep your blood sugar at 180 all the time. And you can't explain to them, no, that's not the case, because somebody didn't tell you, no, that's not the case. So
right.
A lot of this series, I think, is about not just saying the first thing that you think to say, but giving it real context and an explanation. This is what we're going to do. This is about the time frame we're going to do it in. This is why it's important. You just can't forget about it and say, oh, he said better high than low. And then you go on, right, you know, from the emergency situation to, you know, a GP, then the GP finally gets you to an endo, and then the endo gets there and they're like, oh, everybody's got this person's target set at 180. They might think that's on purpose because you can't handle it, or maybe you had lows before, or they'll make assumptions, right, and, you know, these assumptions are what kill everybody.
Right.
Yeah. But this is how it comes out. I wish my doctor would have told me that staying high for long periods is just as dangerous as a low.
And for this person, it might have been that there wasn't enough follow-up then, or maybe they didn't follow up with somebody who could have helped them put the targets a little tighter together, right?
Yeah.
Maybe they also didn't know enough to ask, hey, I was told initially the higher targets are okay, that I shouldn't necessarily live there, but if I touch 250 after every meal and 4 hours later it comes back down, that must be okay, right? Because that's what I was told. Yeah. It takes, I think, you know, diabetes especially it's an evolving sort of trend of discussion, mm-hmm, where this is where I am. This is the scenario. This is the really important stuff to focus on now. Okay, a month from now, a week from now, whatever, you're very likely going to be in a different place. You're ready to get more information. You're ready to ask more questions. And the doctors should also sort of move down that path with you. If you're not bringing up that, they should be bringing it up and saying, well, you're here and everything looks safe.
Right.
It looks good, but you could be here, right? Let's try this. This is why. And that explanation to the why is really important.
It's the nuance of the conversation. Like, you can, mm-hmm, tell somebody, it's not wrong to say to somebody, hey, if your blood sugar shot up to 250 and came back down and leveled out again, that's fine. Not every time. You know, right, like, not at every meal, because, right, if you want, now you tell me that's okay. And what you're probably trying to do is give a little bit of comfort. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, hey, don't kill yourself.
Don't stress about it.
Yeah. If it jumps up one time, it jumps back down. Let you know, that's okay. Let it go. But once you tell them it's okay, then breakfast jumps up, lunch jumps up, dinner jumps up, a snack jumps up. They get high overnight, but it comes back down 3 hours later. And before you know it, that's an 8A1C. You know, and they, in their head, they're like, well, the doctor said it's okay if it goes up and it comes back down again. They don't understand the big picture. Listen,
right,
most people don't understand the big picture of health. I was just talking to a nurse on another recording recently. It's not out yet. And she said one of the most shocking things about becoming a nurse was learning how little people knew about their own body. Like, she called it, Jenny's making the face. Yeah, like she's like, shocking how bad it is. And it led me to say, I saw somebody eating nachos with a bowl full of queso the other day, and I saw the bowl, like the size of a softball, full of liquid cheese, and I thought, you're not supposed to consume that in a year.
Right, yes.
Yeah, you know, like, and here you are, you know, in one sitting, and then metabolic issues come up, which you don't see right away and are hard to diagnose, and they end up looking like, I get headaches all the time, or my knees always hurt, or why does my stomach hurt, or how come I don't poop right? Like, it becomes, and then you're off to the races, and before you know it, your blood sugars are hard to deal with. You have all kinds of other underlying issues, and mm-hmm, they don't come to the surface until they come to the surface in a very aggressive way with, like, some specific problem. And when, right, we're talking about people with diabetes, we're talking about renal and cardiac and your eyes and—
Absolutely.
Big stuff, you know, not just go on a diet for 6 months and this will all work itself out, you know.
What you said initially is 100% the case. Unless you have any type of biology avenue of education, you really are left in the dark about what your body is supposed to be able to do. How does it function? When I do this, this is what my body does with this, right? And I, one of like my best examples of that was years ago working just as a dietitian in education, specifically in gestational diabetes. A woman had come in to me and we were talking about kind of her eating and how that impacted blood sugar. And I said, well, you know what? I don't see like a lot of fresh stuff. And I said, I don't see any fruit at all. And she's like, no, I eat fruit every day for breakfast. And I was like, oh, we didn't mention that. You know, she's like, yeah, I did. It's right here. I eat Fruit Loops. She was not kidding.
Not joking.
She was not joking, which means that as an adult age where she was, long term, she never knew that Fruit Loops don't count as a fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
may I out myself for a second? I once said to my wife, I was half joking, but contournext.com/juicebox. That's the link you'll use to find out more about the Contour Next Gen Blood Glucose Meter. When you get there, there's a little bit at the top. You can click right on blood glucose monitoring. I'll do it with you. Go to meters, click on any of the meters. I'll click on the Next Gen. And you're going to get more information. It's easy to use and highly accurate. SmartLite provides a simple understanding of your blood glucose levels. And of course, with second chance sampling technology, you can save money with fewer wasted test strips. As if all that wasn't enough, the Contour Next Gen also has a compatible app for an easy way to share and see your blood glucose results. ContourNext.com/juicebox. And if you scroll down at that link, you're going to see things like a buy now button. You could register your meter after you purchase it. Or what is this? Download a coupon. Oh, receive a free Contour Next Gen blood glucose meter. Do tell. ContourNext.com/juicebox. Head over there now. Get the same accurate and reliable meter that we use. If you take insulin or sulfonylureas, you are at risk for your blood sugar going too low. You need a safety net when it matters most. Be ready with Gvoke HypoPen. My daughter carries Gvoke HypoPen everywhere she goes because it's a ready-to-use rescue pen for treating very low blood sugar in people with diabetes ages 2 and above that I trust. Low blood sugar emergencies can happen unexpectedly, and they demand quick action. Luckily, Gvoke HypoPen can be administered in 2 simple steps, even by yourself in certain situations. Show those around you where you store Gvoke HypoPen and how to use it. They need to know how to use Gvoke HypoPen before an emergency situation happens. Learn more about why Gvoke HypoPen is in Arden's Diabetes Toolkit at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. Gvoke shouldn't be used if you have a tumor in the gland on the top of your kidneys called a pheochromocytoma, or if you have a tumor in your pancreas called an insulinoma. Visit gvokeglucagon.com/risk for safety information. But I don't think I was completely joking. She's like, you don't get enough vegetables. I was like, I ate veggie sticks the other day. And she goes, Scott, those are potato chips. And I was like, I said, well, they said there's carrots in them.
Yes. So I mean, and there was a little bit of like humorous component, sure, to it, but I was just like, I came home and I said to my husband, he's like, no, he's like, she was joking. I was like, no.
I told you before when my mom looked pre-diabetic a handful of years ago and a doctor told her to change her diet, she put together a diet that was worse than the one she was eating. Yeah. Sure. And she was trying to eat something that would follow along with what he was saying. People just don't know. So it's not your fault. But the doctor needs to know that that's the situation.
Correct.
Yeah. You know, so this next person says there are ways to have a lower, more healthy A1C. They're being kind here about the podcast, such as being bold with insulin. Let us know that this is possible and help us to achieve better A1Cs. Please don't shame us for falling short, but do encourage us to do better.
Mm-hmm.
I see this a lot, right? Like nobody wants to tell somebody they're not doing well.
Right.
I don't know, it became a social thing for a while. You know what I mean? Like nobody wants to tell you the truth sometimes.
I feel people are worried on the end of professional. People are worried about creating like a shame type of explanation. Mm-hmm. When really that's your job is to tell somebody when they're not healthy. Yeah. That's your job, right? You didn't go into healthcare to tell people to keep eating what they're eating or to keep, you know, not doing what they're not doing.
You're not there to make friends. And, you know, I get that. I would bet the argument back would be, if I push these people, they're not going to come back again. And to that, I might say, at least you told them the truth.
Correct.
You know, like now it's on them at least, you know, but keeping it from them or pretending they're going to do the right thing, that's not helping anybody. That's just, I mean, that's you're lying and they're lying and we all know each other's lying and none of us are saying anything about it. It's weird.
Right.
You know.
I see questions often still in this sort of day that we're in with technology. I still see questions about why people are, and it goes right along with this management and even like target range for blood sugar and whatever. Why are we explaining blood sugar targets that are outside of the realm of what somebody without diabetes, right? Why are we saying that a 200 blood sugar, a 250, that's safe. That's okay. You can come up here. You can kind of settle back down, et cetera. You know, the human body does not do that without diabetes. So why are we constantly telling people that it's okay for you to be in this really wide range?
Right.
And then down the road, their expectation comes to be, well, I stuck within these targets and now I have problems with my eyes or now I can't feel my feet. And I did what I was told. I was told this is okay.
Yeah. No, I think it's got something to do with the physicians either not understanding it themselves, the mechanics of getting to those other blood sugars, or they've seen so many people fail at it that they think it's not possible. So why am I going to give them a target they can't reach? At least I'll give them one that they can get. But that's where this person here says, learn how to communicate diabetes dosing suggestions. So often we're told to do something, but not given a reason why. And you and I made a note after that that says, don't just give us a fish, teach us how to fish. And
Yeah, absolutely. I think I had a thought. Let me bring it back into my brain. It's like right there on the tip of my tongue. It'll come back to me. It's okay.
Well, I think we got thrown off when your cat's whiskers came into the camera first.
Yes, I'm sorry. I was going to comment and I was like, no, it's okay. I know. She likes to
watched your brain pause. You were like, do I say something about that or let it go?
Yes. Sorry.
I'm the fault though. I stepped over you. You had a look on your face like you were going to say something. And I said that.
It's okay. Don't worry about it.
I wish at diagnosis they told us that what we learn at the beginning is foundational. And there are many things to learn moving forward for best management, like pre-bolusing, glycemic impact, load, bolusing for fat and protein, being aggressive when aggressive is necessary. Also, I wish they would have emphasized that ratios and basals will change. And what numbers we get aren't set in stone. Okay, so this becomes another big problem. You know, you set somebody's, this happened to me. I remember the doctor once saying, what's Arden's insulin to carb ratio? And when I pulled it up, it was like one unit to like, I don't know, like some insanely large number, 300 carbs or something like that. Cause she was diagnosed when she was so little, but we were like years later and no one had ever changed it.
Oh,
and I didn't know anything about it back then.
Sure.
So I'm like, oh, she's having all these high blood sugars all the time. And I'm like, I'm having a lot of trouble with meals and I can't figure it out. And back then I wasn't the guy who was like, oh, just do this. I went back to the doctor and I was like, I don't know what to do. And they pulled that setting out. They're like, oh, and it was like, it was off by like, I think she was 1 to 100 and it was set at 1 to 3. She was using 2/3 too little insulin at every, for every carb. So, you know,
that actually, it kind of made me think of what I was going to say is that I think that in, at least initially, and maybe even for somebody who has had diabetes a long time and now is really coming in with a set of questions, what it boils down to is explaining that this initial information is just that. It's a baseline to start with. And navigating diabetes, I wish people would just be honest and say, it's not easy. Mm-hmm. It can get along the way of learning. You experience ahas. Oh, well, that totally makes sense, right? Or gosh, this definitely can be built in now. So there are stepping stones, if you will, to management. But as you just said, there's not just a start here, dose this. There is, again, kind of evolving changes and that growth has to happen in your understanding. But how you understand it needs to be what comes from the clinical team that's helping you. So they should explain to you that this isn't simply just put the insulin in and eat the food.
Right.
That's not how simple this is.
Yeah. I remember a doctor once saying when Arden was younger, wait till she gets hormones. Like, oh, wait till you see the female hormones. Ooh. And I was like, what? She goes, oh. I'm like, wait a minute. Ooh, ah.
Like, what do you mean?
Context? Is there any context? You know, oh, hormones make it harder. And I'm like, and? You know what I mean? Like, I figured it out between then and when it actually happened for myself, but nobody ever, like, in that time, no one ever stepped up and said, are you bolusing differently? Do you notice any strategies that help or hurt? Or, you know, are there times of the month that are different right. than others? That conversation never happened. Just, oh my gosh, you should see. Wait till you see what happens. And like, so I spent years going like, ooh, like
I'm worried.
I wonder what's going to happen. Yeah.
And as if she didn't have hormones at the age that she was at.
Yeah, she was growing. I'm sure she had growth hormones. So at the very, and others. This person says, this is kind of funny. Bolusing for fat and protein impacts as a type 1 diabetic should not be considered an advanced topic. And I thought, well, that's really true. It's very, very true. You can gather up 100 people with type 1 diabetes and ask them, you know, what has your endocrinologist taught you about dosing for the impacts of fat or protein? They're not going to, I mean, two people are going to say somebody mentioned that to them, you know?
Correct.
And yet it throws off every meal, almost every meal of every day, and someone's management for 24 hours that turns into a week, that turns into a month. And it can be at the core of the whole thing. The other day, Arden, she's away at school, and she said, I did get a text from her. Hey, I had to stop at a drive-thru on the way back. I'm, I had to grab something to eat. I'm out of time. I was like, what'd you get? She said, I got Chick-fil-A. And I said, okay, 45 minutes from now, your blood sugar is going to go up. And I was like, don't forget. So, you know, and by the way, you know what she did? She forgot. But I was.
Because she was probably driving.
Well, she was now at another place doing this homework, and then she had to get into a class and stuff like that. And I said to her, I'm like, okay, look, just look at your algorithm. Is it suggesting any insulin? And she said, yes. I was like, I think you should put it in, you know, mm-hmm. because the algorithm was trying to fight. It was trying to fight the fight, but it wasn't going to because it wasn't compensating for the, she didn't put fat into the, to
she
the
didn't,
bolus.
It didn't know what it was trying to fight.
Yeah. It didn't know mm-hmm. what it was doing. Just like this morning, by the way, she thought she lost her ID. So like I get this call. I'm like woken
again?
Out of bed.
Didn't that happen last year?
This is going to happen a couple of times, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. But while she's searching for the ID and doing the math in her head that if she doesn't leave 5 minutes from now, she's going to be late. And if she's late, then she misses a class and she only gets to miss so many. And I'm watching her blood sugar. It is just going up. It just went from 100 to 120 to 130 to 140. She got an arrow straight up from trying to find her ID.
From stress.
Yeah. From the stress of it.
Oh.
Doctor ain't going to tell you that. They're going to say something like, oh, the mornings, huh?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, the mornings. They're hard. Thanks a lot.
Right. And that will be, as we talked about before, that'll be one of the finger pointing on the records. It'll say, what happened here?
Yeah.
She's like, I don't know. I was probably in school.
Well, a month from now, if you ask Arden what happened there, she's not going to say, I lost my ID, thought I was going to be late and got upset. Like, she's going to know, I don't know what this is, you know? So, but all this goes back to tools. Like, this person says, give me the correct tools. Give me parameters and instructions. Mm-hmm. Let me know I could probably do this if I had these things in place.
Right.
And to what your point is, I always say it's experiences. Like you have to have them over and over and over again before they just start becoming not just like second nature, but they make sense to you. Like out of nowhere, something happens. You go, I know what to do.
Yes.
As soon as she drove away, like, you know, she had her ID this morning and she left, I thought she needs a temporary basal increase. Like, I don't care if she's on an algorithm or not. Like, right now, she needs a temp basal increase. This algorithm is not, it doesn't know there's an impact here. She's rising as if she ate food, and it has not been told there's any food there.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that, and it knocked it back down pretty quickly, yeah.
Good example I have of, like, those lived experiences. Mm-hmm. You can provide all the information possible. And then when you get into, like, from, you know, my angle of providing education and give you scenarios, things that might happen, but until they really happen, you have nothing to apply that to. And you may need to dig deep and think about it, right? A good example is somebody I work with who had emailed me about a scenario and emailed me just to say, you know what? Everything that I've learned, I knew how to work around it. And I think I did the right thing.
Yeah.
And 100%, this person had done the right thing, right? Blood sugars that were doing something that shouldn't have been happening based on everything else that had led up to that point. And what did the person do? They changed their site, they changed their insulin, and it all navigated back down.
Right.
But without some lived experience and some information pointing to, hey, if this, then this,
right?
They're going to throw their hands up and be like, I don't know what it was.
Yeah, not make that change. And also, you know, that's true because oftentimes you'll see people changing out sites when it's not the problem,
right?
When their settings are bad and they're constantly like, the pump doesn't work. The pump doesn't work. They mm-hmm. over and over. And I sometimes online, I'm like, stop. They're like, I've changed the pump 3 times. I'm like, stop changing the pump. just stop. It's not your site, right? Like your settings are bad. Like, or your settings are great, but something's happening right now and your settings aren't up for the challenge of what's happening today. You know, like it's again, lived experiences. That's how you'll figure this all out. I like this feedback here. Give me all of the options, not just the ones that you think are best or better or efficient. I would like to make my own decisions and then craft my own ecosystem of how I deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great point. You know, there's more than one way to do this. And everybody's brain doesn't click with the way you say it one time, right? Just you have to give people the autonomy to. Autonomy is such a big part of this, because if they don't have that, they don't have all the ideas and they can pick and choose from it, make their own tool belt. That's a problem. But if they don't feel like they can make changes on their own, that's also a problem. Like that's a big, big problem for people with type 1 diabetes. The ones that don't feel comfortable or don't feel like it's their job to make changes to settings, they're the ones I see struggle the most long-term mm-hmm. as adults. Do you agree?
Yes, absolutely. Because they've, from an early on diagnosis, whether it was childhood and that's how their parents navigated, because that's what they were taught how to do. And then they move into adulthood managing that way, really only following up with the doctor every 6 months. And that's when something gets shifted and changed and not really knowing that they're in the driver's seat 24/7 between that 15-20 minute visit with the endo every 6 months, mm-hmm. right? You are the navigator. But unfortunately, if you don't tell somebody, it's almost like giving the okay. Many people with this type of a use of something that supplies life, insulin, right? You really have to be directive and say, you know what? I'm going to give you these starting places. And here are some pointers for adjusting. I'm happy if you adjust. In fact, give me feedback when you try an adjustment so I can help you behind the scenes if there's, you know, communication with an electronic record or something like that.
Right.
But you have to almost give the okay to people. Otherwise, they may also come back to the office and not provide feedback that they've been tweaking things on their own because they may feel like they're going to get their hand slapped.
Yeah. Oh, that's definitely happening.
Right.
Yeah. People are definitely lying. They're always like, I can't let my doctor catch me doing this. How many people say that to me? I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, oh, I want to make an adjustment to the basal, but I'm afraid I'm going to get in trouble. In trouble. Like, so ironically, you're not in trouble, quote unquote, for the 7.5 A1C, but you would be in trouble for putting the basal up 0.3 an hour and making it a 7.
Right.
Fascinating.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And insulin, interestingly, is I can't think of any other medications on the market that people self-adjust, right? Like you don't go to your cardiologist and they give you blood pressure medication. You're like, today I think I'm going to take 2 of these tablets because I just want to see what's going to happen, right? Like insulin is one of those, it's the only thing that really, it does require you to look at your own information and make adjustments based on what you're seeing and where you want to end up. What is the target you're aiming for? What are you trying to get to? Yeah. Things aren't working.
It's also interesting where the line gets drawn. And I had a root canal go bad. It was like 11 years old. So I was pretty happy it lasted that long. So I had to have it changed out, right? And when he got in there, he's like, hey, there's like a little bit of an infection in there. You know, this is really going to hurt tomorrow. Let me give you a prescription for a pain medication. He said, the one I'm going to write for you is highly addictive, he said. So you have to be careful. And I was like, I'm going to go with Advil, if you don't mind, right? And he goes, no, you should probably take this script because this is going to be a problem, blah, blah. And I was like, I'm good. I don't need your script, right? By the way, I didn't even take an Advil when it was over. The guy's a great dentist and did a great job. But he was so willing to be like, here, would you like a week's worth of narcotics? Because yes. I dug around in your gum for an hour. And I was like, wow, look how easily he would have given that to me.
Yes.
But then you go ask an endocrinologist, hey, you know, wouldn't it be cool if that lady could change her basal? And they can't handle that.
Right.
They can't handle that. But you can give them oxy? I was like,
right.
All right. Can we make sense once in a while? No? All right. This person says, give your medical opinion. Please don't parrot what you're reading. In this example, it's their kid was doing a 6 for a lot of years. And then it rose up. And then the doctor went, that's okay. It's still within target. And they're basically just telling them like what the ADA said. Like ADA says 7's fine. This is fine. And like, so then that takes the onus away to do better again. It's just like, oh, whatever. You're fine. It's like, mm-hmm. What's your blood pressure supposed to be? I don't know these things. 120 over or something?
Yeah. It's supposed, under 140. And it's like one, let's call it like 130 over 80.
Okay.
Right. But in anything kind of, within, that's sort of the range.
Right. But if your blood pressure was 150 over 90 all the time, would a doctor go, that's all right. It's cool. Not bad.
No. they shouldn't.
No.
They should not.
But you, no. I saw you getting upset earlier talking about those calling 250 is okay. You know what I mean? Like that's the same thing. But you don't. But that doesn't get seen that way. A cardiologist would never say that to you. An endocrinologist would say that to you all day long. Mm-hmm. Oh, just 250? It comes back down? You're fine. What? How am I going to be in 20 years?
Right.
Yeah. What do you own a LASIK center or something like that? And you're thinking of getting a diabetes surgery too? Like what are you trying to have happen to me here?
No.
I got upset. Now you can talk.
No, I was going to say, and for the person who is a little bit more concerned about the lower blood sugars because of whatever fear that was instilled eons ago or whatever, those numbers that are higher that they've been told are okay, even for lingering or, non-lingering time periods, like a blip up and then it kind of comes back down. Eventually, they may get to feeling that they're safer, they're okay at those numbers, because in their mind, 250 becomes okay then all the time.
Yes.
Not just the up and it comes back into what you define as the it's healthy in range. Place to be.
Yeah, in it's range. In range, yeah.
Yes.
Especially with the thing that you don't feel. Listen, if your blood sugars, if your A1Cs rise slowly enough, you won't feel the impacts, the physical impacts. Your body's going to do a pretty good job of trying not to die. And like, what was it? This opens up blood vessels. It like does all kinds of stuff, right? Like to try to
adapt.
Yeah. To do that kind of stuff. So, so when you say it's okay, this person is slowly not becoming themselves anymore. They're altered mentally. Even you don't even realize how foggy they are. They get used to that. Their body gets used to trying to exist like this. No different than, how you end up with an enlarged heart from smoking, right?
Right.
Same idea. And yet it's like, oh, it's okay. It's okay. It's not okay. Like it wouldn't be okay for you. If the doctor's blood sugar was 250 all the time, they'd be going like, we got to fix this, you know? So I don't know why that tired, it's just tired. It's lazy.
Well, and again, with today's technology and everything that we have, that it's got such tight ability to have alerts and alarms to keep people safe. And yes, technology can be a little weird and whatever. The majority of the time, what we have today with the alarms and the alerts, there's no reason to say that you can skirt up to this value as long as you're not under here and as long as you're not hanging out in the low zone. And again, that's not even often very well defined.
Yeah.
What's too low? Where do you want to hit? What? How long can I sit at what you're not telling me about a low number? What do I do? It's very like flim-flammy.
It's nebulous. It really.
And, yes.
And by the way, even now with a non-aggressive algorithm, like the eyelet, for example, that thing's still targeting probably under like 180 or 170. And you and I would be like, I mean, listen, it's a great tool and I think it's going to help a lot of people, but I wouldn't put it on my daughter. And like, and that's 70 points better than telling somebody 250 is okay. So, and you just need to understand, speaking of understanding, even though we had management under control and a consistent A1C in the fives, my endo, my son's endo, said that we need to do less work. We need to do less work and let his numbers get higher. So his A1C is more like in the mid sixes or sevens. That whole you're trying too hard thing, I don't get that. Like, I really don't, because I know they don't want people to go crazy taking care of themselves.
Right.
But at some point, it does become second nature. Like you know what I mean? It's a lot of hard work up front for a lot of benefit long term.
And I think in a visit where you, the clinician, you're looking at that, let's call it A1C, which again is not the
time and range and everything is important.
Right. Are you asking more in depth about how much work it is taking? Because again, once you've been there for a while, as you said, it becomes more, most of it becomes more second nature, and you're able to just navigate and keep that.
Yeah.
Because you're doing what is pretty typical. And until or unless something changes with a growing child or a teen or something in adult life, for the most part, you're doing a good enough job. And that's when you have to define or ask the person, gosh, how much are you checking?
Yeah.
Right. And if you can see that, you know, even in a visit, somebody's like every 2 seconds, they're like looking at their numbers. There might be something more like on the mental angle to address.
Psychological issue. Yeah. They might be under a lot of stress and pressure. But yeah, just assuming, you know, it really does. It piggybacks onto this point that you added to here. You told me, please bring up that seeing a good low A1C and assuming it's from like low blood sugars is a dangerous way to think as a doctor. This is, oh, Jenny, this happens constantly. The amount of people who listen to this podcast then head off back to the doctor super excited. Oh, my God, I got my A1C down. It's nice. And it's not that hard even. I figured it out. Like, turns out my settings were wrong. And the doctor yells at them because they, as soon as they see a number that's lower on that A1C, they assume you've had multiple, you know, elongated lows to create that A1C because they don't even know how to do it. It's such a unknown quantity to them that they just assume that you've cheated the A1C test by having a lot of lows.
Right.
Yeah. And some of them won't listen when people try to explain it to them, or the people are put their head down and, you know, don't stick up for themselves.
Right.
It's a dangerous assumption to make. That's just because somebody has an A1C in the sixes or the fives, that must mean they're low all the time. My kid's never low. Like once in a great while. And even that means a drifting to 55. Not like, you know, oh my God, what, you know, blah, blah, blah. Most of the time her blood sugar's, I don't know. It's never usually under 70.
Right.
You know, honestly. So we have some bullet points to go through here at the end. We have like 10 minutes left.
Yes.
Some of them are repetitive, so we might have to pick through them and I'll skip over the ones. I wish my doctor knew that tightly managing my son's blood sugar is far less stressful than living on the roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing you wouldn't know unless you lived with it.
Correct.
Like actually trying and working towards it is not as hard on you as the unknown aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's the difference between being told you're about to walk through a haunted house and not being told. You know, when stuff's just jumping out from around the corner all the time, you're always like, oh, what's going to happen next?
Right.
But yeah, working hard, I find this to be true for me. I don't know that everybody would find this to be true. I assume you do. Right? Like the work you do is worth what you get out of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. Because I have things that are known, and it makes the majority of my management more like brushing my teeth. Mm. I don't think about that. I'm like, brush my teeth, whatever, right? It's not a thought.
Right.
I half the time it's like out of my brain that you're putting the toothbrush on the brush and brushing and whatever. That's how I think about the majority of my management. Unless something is really shifting, stress or whatever, or I'm ill. But even that, I've got enough years of experience kind to of have a go-to.
Yeah.
Right. It's a starting point of, I can try to do this and definitely it helps.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. No, I always describe it as walking through a door. I don't like consciously think, reach out, grab the knob, turn it, pull. I just end up outside the door. And that's right. How diabetes works for you after a while. And it becomes a muscle. Like, I bet you, Mike Tyson hasn't fought in a while, but I bet you if you walked up to him and tried to slap him, I bet you his head would move pretty quick and he'd pop you right in the mouth. And so, you know, like, and I think that's kind of how diabetes ends up working out. You don't know it's happening, but now you have all this experience and, you know, blah, blah, blah. This person says, please tell people that they could actually go into DKA with a normal blood sugar number.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's so important. And where do you usually go if you have ketones and you're not feeling well and you can't keep something down? Where are you going?
Back to the hospital that doesn't seem to know anything about helping me with my diabetes.
And in that scenario, we actually unfortunately had a really sort of a bad situation with one of our clinicians who her fiance had to advocate for her. And she's actually kind of corresponding with the hospital system because of how they navigated it for. She knew what, she was there for 5 hours trying to get them to just give her fluids. Mm-hmm. Her blood sugar was normal. They kept telling her she wasn't in detrimental need.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But she knew.
I mean, and that's, yeah, she knew. She knew what she needed. I mean, sure, if you can stick your own IV.
Well, imagine that, though.
That's great.
Imagine knowing so much about it that you know you're in this trouble. This is the next need you have. You need IV fluids. Then you take yourself to the right place, tell the people who are supposed to know, and they're the ones who are going to be the impediment between you and not maybe dying. And that happens quick, by the way. I forget how do they put it? Like, it's not compatible with life, the acidity, right? That happens.
Correct.
Right.
The changes in all of your electrolytes and all of the things that should be being measured in the body. I mean, ketones are one marker. And obviously with diabetes, blood sugar would be technically another thing that they look at. But, you know, when we talk about euglycemic DKA, that's unfortunately a level well above what most emergency departments even understand how to navigate.
Yeah.
So
I'll run through the rest of these here. Somebody said, please, you should talk about the benefits of like mini glucagon injections for some people, especially with little kids who have trouble with lows. Please tell people about pre-bolusing. This woman says, we said this already today, protein and fat and how it impacts blood sugars and spikes. An explanation of insulin resistance would have been nice. When it happens, why it happens, and how to manage it. So that's a person saying, even if your settings work, when something else happens, I should know like what to do next.
Right.
I wish my doctor knew that A1C wasn't everything. As soon as my doctor hears that my A1C is 6.8, I hear from them, you're doing great. Don't worry. Meanwhile, I'm on a roller coaster all day long. I've got 50 blood sugars and 400 blood sugars on most days, and I have no idea where to begin. But they saw the 6.8 and said, hey, you're doing great.
Right.
Yeah, that's it. I wish they knew that there was no good reason to delay a person from getting a continuous glucose monitor. When in a hospital or as soon as after diagnosis as possible. I still want people to learn how to prick their fingers, but a CGM is such it's a next level. And I think people deserve it who have type 1 diabetes. I think anybody using insulin deserves one.
I agree.
Same thing with 100%. Pumps. Please tell us about pumps sooner. This person says you should tell people about the podcast. That's very nice, whoever put that in here.
I would say along with the pumps that I think it's gotten better. Most practices now have more knowledge about the multiple options that are on the market. But I still see practices that are more prone to offering or suggesting heavily one particular pump versus another.
Yeah.
And what that often comes from is just their knowledge about that one particular system, and they feel so strongly that it is the right one. Again, this is where individualization needs to come into the picture. So you need to know about everything to help the person pick the right one at the right time.
I think in a world where, you know, especially while we're making these episodes, in a world where people are so undereducated in the things that they're talking to other people about, I understand where this comes from. Like, you know, I figured out how to use this one pump. At least I can talk to them over the phone about where the settings at and stuff like that. But you are eliminating choice from people, and not just their personal choice, but choice that might allow them to find something that actually fits in their lifestyle better.
Right.
You know, I saw a little girl the other day online, so happy holding her tandem, her X2. Aww. Yeah, she's so thrilled, you know. And someone said, how come you didn't get her an Omnipod? There wouldn't have been any tubes. And she said, this just works better for her. And like for her personality, she said, good.
Great.
Like, that's great. Yeah. But you shouldn't get like, because the, you know, I mean, because think of how that happens. Why do you know one pump better than the other one?
Right.
I don't know. Because the salesperson got there first. You know what I mean? Like, what the heck? Because back in the day, before all the laws, they sent the doctors on better vacations. You know, that's why we're doing this one. Jenny's laughing because that is what they used to do. That's not legal anymore. I'm sure that doesn't happen.
Good lunches. That's what
they used to have, like meetings, but they'd have them in Hawaii.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or take you out for, you know, good like dinners where it was like a lunch and learn type of experience. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah. A bottle of bourbon and a steak. And all of a sudden we're getting a pump.
I remember when that all changed.
Yeah. Yeah. That was actually a good law. I don't have anything else for this one. So I'm just want to ask you, you know, for your kind of closing thoughts on how doctors should be talking about actual management to people.
Yeah, I think we discussed the majority of what was, I really do, especially along with all of the comments that people offered just in consideration. I think, you know, all of this communication and management and everything that we've talked about so far, it boils down to individualizing and really knowing starting place and where to move from there with somebody, because that starting place again is just that. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to move that person along and or help them move along because of the questions that they're bringing you. Maybe they're further along in understanding than you think they would be,
yeah.
Right? So you have to meet them where their need is.
Yeah, I know. It sounds, I always feel stupid saying cliched things, but meet people where they are, big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you understanding what you're talking about, big deal. You being able to communicate what you're talking about, big deal. And giving people a complete story and not just snippets is very, very important. Anyway, agreed. Thank you for doing this with me. Yes, thank you.
Of course.
Yep. A huge thanks to the Contour Next Gen Blood Glucose Meter for sponsoring this episode of the Juice Box Podcast. Learn more and get started today at contournext.com/juicebox. A huge thank you to one of today's sponsors, Gvoke Glucagon. Find out more about Gvoke HypoPen at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. You spell that gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. If you or a loved one has been diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, the Bold Beginnings series from the Juice Box Podcast is a terrific place to begin listening. In this series, Jenny Smith and I will go over the questions most often asked at the beginning of type 1. Jenny is a certified diabetes care and education specialist who is also a registered and licensed dietitian, and Jenny has had type 1 diabetes for 35 years. My name is Scott Benner, and I am the father of a child who has type 1 diabetes. Our daughter Arden was diagnosed in 2006 at the age of 2. I believe that at the core of diabetes management, understanding how insulin works and how food and other variables impact your system is of the utmost importance. The Bold Beginnings series will lead you down the path of understanding. The series is made up of 24 episodes, and it begins at episode 698 in your podcast or audio player. I'll list those episodes at the end of this. To listen, you can go to juiceboxpodcast.com, go up to the menu at the top, and choose Bold Beginnings, or go into any audio app like Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and then find the episodes that correspond with the series. Those lists, again, are at Juicebox Podcast up in the menu, or if you're in the private Facebook group, in the featured tab. The private Facebook group has over 40,000 members. There are conversations happening right now and 24 hours a day that you would be incredibly interested in. So don't wait. So don't wait. Check out the Bold Beginnings series today and get started on your journey. Episode 698 defines the Bold Beginnings series. 702, honeymooning. 706, adult diagnosis. 711 and 712 go over diabetes terminologies. In episode 715, we talk about fear of insulin. In 719, the 15-15 rule. Episode 723, long-acting insulin. 727, target range. 731, food choices. 735, pre-bolus. 739, carbs. 743, stacking. 747, flexibility. In episode 751, we discuss school. In episode 755, exercise. 759, guilt, fears, hope, and expectations. In episode 763 of the Bold Beginnings series, we talk about community. 772, journaling. 776, technology and medical supplies. Episode 780, treating low blood glucose. Episode 784, dealing with insurance. 788, talking to your family. And episode 805, illness and ketone management. Check it out. It will change your life. When you support the Juice Box podcast by clicking on the advertisers' links, you are helping to keep the show free and plentiful. I am certainly not asking you to buy something that you don't want, but if you're going to buy something or use a device from one of the advertisers, getting your purchases set up through my links is incredibly helpful. So if you have the desire or the need, please consider using Juice Box podcast links to make your purchases. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back soon with another episode of the Juice Box Podcast. The episode you just heard was professionally edited by Wrong Way Recording. WrongWayRecording.com.